I have a question that I guess to ask general question, see where it takes us, but how can we justify the mitzvah of getting drunk on purpose? Like how is that in line with the Torah?
You're right, because the Rambam says that you're not allowed to be drunk on Yom Tov because we weren't in a stav on holus, just the wildness. So the question is, how could that be a kima mitzvah on Purim? So there are rishonim that hold it's not, but the plain pshat in the Gemara is mashma that it is. So the reason what we gave was that the Yom HaPurim is to relive the Nes, the experience of the Nes. And the experience of the Nes was that after the Nes, the Jews, in order to show the Pirsumei Nisa, so they engaged in a party. Well, the first time they engaged in a party was because of the event. Then later they re-established it because of Pirsumei Nisa in the following years. But the first time, why did they engage in such a party? Because it was a victory party. That was the common party, that was a victory party, like Achashverosh's party. So they had to do it in a way where they had to demonstrate to the world that they were victorious. So it had to be a victory party. So a victory party had to entail Shvia, Mishta. So that's why we relive the same party that they did in those days.
Why do we have to demonstrate to the world that we were victorious?
Because that was very important at that time, politically. Because they wanted to show that the guy wanted to kill us, and we were victorious. They wanted to show that we were over them, victorious. So we had to use a means which was accepted in those days as a party of victory, like Achashverosh's party. So now we just simply redo what they did. But of course the Rishon said, like the Rambam says, all you have to do is drink enough and fall asleep. Not much least to go while drunk, because that can be dangerous. And al pi din, I mean, just to remind us of the idea.
What is the proper amount or the proper way for a yeshiva boy to...
I would say do like the Rambam, drink a little bit and fall asleep.
The drinking is supposed to cause you to fall asleep?
Yeah. But it does.
Aren't there intermediary
states? You don't have to drink that much to fall asleep. You know, you just drink enough to make you tired so you close your eyes for a few minutes. That, I think, is the best way. But there are others that maintain that you're not mechuyev to do it all together. You just should drink more than you usually drink. Because they hold that it's not, you don't have to do the same exact mishnah that they did years ago. You just have to indicate that it's that kind of a mishnah. So you drink more than you usually do to indicate that it's a different kind of a mishnah. More than you usually do. That's why I believe there are more paskins that way. So you can be also that way too. And the Meiri, if I'm not mistaken, is very much against the shivers.
Well, if it's just showing that we're reenacting the victory party, why can't we just do a victory party that we do today? Not necessarily.
Well, I mean, the whole idea is to do the one that they did then. That's the Pirsumei Nisa. And the victory, I don't know what a victory party is today. Again.
Like, is that the reenactment day today?
You have to do exactly what they did.
Yeah.
But the Meiri, if I'm not mistaken, doesn't hold from it all together. He just holds that there should be Mishta Yayim, but not Chikras. He holds apparently that the Mishta is just the fact that you have Yayim there. But it doesn't have to be Chikras.
They had the...
But definitely to go Chikras where the person loses his mind, that definitely is wrong. That definitely was wrong.
they had the victory party, like it was Susa during the day. That was the time they had it.
Yeah. But also Yom Mishta V'Simcha. So they had to conform to the societal in order that the Gaon should recognize that they were victorious. Keep them in their place.
So how do you understand the Gemara when it says Ablu Yodea? Mm-hmm. Like that?
Well, the Rambam learns, I guess the Rambam learns it means when he does Zuf.
Okay. Seems like a interpretation.
A lean interpretation.
Like the interpretation, I mean, the word means, so you don't, I mean, I'm not saying you should, I'm just...
You know
like
how far drunk that is, that,
he's
stoned. I mean, so I mean, they don't take the Gemara literally.
Okay.
I mean, according to the Rambam, that's what it means. It means, Adla Yada means that he's near done, he falls asleep. But, I mean, the question is if you can interpret it in another way. I mean, there's something about it. There are many interpretations. A lot of them are like cute interpretations, you know.
There are on bar modify, like switching that.
That what?
Like our Haman Baruch Mordechai isn't something about switching that. So you confuse them.
You could interpret it like this. That the our Haman was because of his evil nature and an understanding of the whole sequence of events that brought him down, with the whole limut from the Megillah, and Baruch Mordechai was just the contrary. The way he acted rationally in line with Chochmas Hashem, and Amoro al-Kachav, Amor Gileam, and to understand the whole sequence and the causes that resulted in our victorious state. So you could say that that's what the Gemara means. That he reaches a state where he can't follow the ideas anymore. He can't follow the ideas that resulted in Baruch Mordechai and Ar Haman.
Why does it share? Because that's like he's in a different state now.
Because he's in the right, he's not in a state where he can follow the ideas. Doesn't just mean the words, it means the concept. So that would make sense.
That's really a question.
What's that?
It seems that you have like Darabon on there, like these mitzvahs of Prisuminisa, like you have, you know, Mikra Megillah on there, Hanukkah. Do you have any mitzvahs of Prisuminisa Doraisa? Or if not, why are there only mitzvahs of Prisuminisa Darabon?
Well, you have, by Sukkah, it says, Laman Yezu Dorasechan, Kivasukkah Sashafti Espinay Yisrael. So it would seem that's Prisuminisa. Especially if you say it's the Anon Kavod, so it was the Anonim of the Nesh.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's not being farsing to other people.
But Laman Yeda Darasecha means it's being farsing to the Jews. The Jewish people. So you have that format. The only thing is that's the Tama Takana. I mean Tama Mitzvah.
Right.
But there's no mitzvah per se in going around Sukkot time and telling people that these are the mitzvah sukkah was made to recognize that idea. So you do have that format, although halachically it takes on a different structure than it does by Purim that becomes the essence. But it wasn't something that Chazal pulled out from nowhere.
Can you say that Purim becomes the essence halachically it's the essence, or philosophically?
Halachically. There's no Pursumenisa, so then it lacks an halacha camp.
Uh-huh.
Whereas in the sukkah, you'd be sitting in the sukkah alone, and there's no presuming. You see, Yosef and Mitzvah Sukkah has its own tour. The reason is Laman Yedid Darasecha. Like reason also, Skatam Skom and Sosa Hashem. So if you look at the tzitzis, it reminds you of all the mitzvahs. But let's say you don't look at the tzitzis, so you didn't do the reason of the mitzvah. But the Kiyama mitzvah, really, you have. So the reason is because everybody wears tzitzis, and people will come to see the tzitzis and it'll remind them of the mitzvah Hashem. But in the tzuras on mitzvah, the actual doing of the mitzvah, there's no mitzvah to look at your tzitzis. Matter of fact, the boys on the karoyim used to hang on the wall. Of course, they say reason or so. They didn't understand the way we understood it. That reason or so is a reason, but the mitzvah is really just to wear the tzitzis.
So why sometimes is the objective like ma'akev and sometimes not
ma'akev? Why by the chacham they made it ma'akev?
Yeah.
Because by the chacham, the reason why they did it, the reason why they made it, the Rambam says, the reason why they made it was to be ma'ameis the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
That the Torah says that God is close to us, b'chol kareinu elav, so to be ma'ameis that, to prove that point, to substantiate that point, so they made the mitzvahs Ner Chanukah and Mikra Megillah. So therefore that becomes the essence of the thing, is to substantiate the Torah. So you can't substantiate it unless the Neis, Pirsum HaNeis, is really an essential component. So Pirsum HaNeis plays a role in the structure of the halacha, whereas in the Torah, it's in the background. It's the reason why. But it doesn't play a role structurally in the halacha. That's the difference between Pirsum HaNeiso, the Rabbanon, and between Maman Yehuda Derasechem or Risum or Schatim's Komet Sof HaRashem. It's a different role. And one it's relegated to the area of Tam, and the other one's relegated to the structure of the mitzvah. For instance, you see, if you read it in Megillah, Ksuv ben Ksuv min Ayotza Tzibur, because you can't recognize the Megillah, it's not Nikkur, so it lacks in Pearson. So it's the Pearson is a part of the structure of the Mitzvah. That's why Nashma Chayavos, Sha'afim Hayubos Anes. It's a different. It's a different objective.
Well, when you say that Pearson is part of the structure, you mean that there are, that because of the town of Pearson, there are now halachos in the structure?
Right.
Because you have that by like Sukkot, like you can't be over 20 hours because of the Manu or Seifam.
That's true, but that's not quite the same thing. Because that's a different kind of a Manu. I mean, people wouldn't really notice. You know, if it was higher than 20, that wouldn't make it any less. That they less in terms of knowing that the sukkah was another cover when Adam was trying. It's just l'man yedra sechem, you have to see the schach. So it's a different kind of a different approach. It's a halachic structural approach, but it's not because of the tam mitzvah. Because the time doesn't make any sense. Man yed derasech. So they won't know because it's too high. They won't know what the. But it's halachic structure. Over there, the man yedu is reduced to halachic structure. Not to the time anymore. Yes?
People have senses of being powerful. So, let's say a person like. Watches a movie that shows a powerful person in a very specific position, like a CEO of a company, and so now this person doesn't just have a vague fantasy, but he has a fantasy which is solidified, in national, now instead of fantasizing about being powerful, fantasizes about being this CEO of this company that he sees in this movie. So is that a harm to someone? Is that like a permanent harm when a person has a fantasy anyway but just gets solidified?
Yeah, well, that's the issue of reading literature. Well, Tifnu al-Lilim, the Gemara said, shouldn't turn towards the idolatry. So that's why he has an issue to read literature. Because you find it Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Shabbos. But the reason is because literature appeals to a person's emotions. It doesn't teach them philosophy, it appeals to the mind and teaches the person what is correct and what is not correct. The literature just appeals to the given emotions of the people and it draws them in and it creates a value system in a different way, by appeal. It doesn't create a value system by reason. So, because a person likes to be powerful, you could have a movie about gangsters where people will admire them and will even wish that they had a life like that. So, it's an appeal to the emotion, the emotions, the way the emotions see life. So, that is a dangerous thing. That Chazal saying, I let it do. Because you're subjecting yourself to influence in a way which is not based on reason, where it's just based on your emotions. Because like you said, everybody has a desire for power. So the person who will see a movie with a powerful CEO, that will become his life's goal. That's not the way to set up a life's goal.
Is the harm that it becomes, that he becomes more attracted because of it? Or
that's
it,
right.
Is the, because there is an effect of, he already has a fantasy anyway, but now he just has particulars for that fantasy, yes, specifics.
Well, yeah, he's feeding the fantasy. I mean, he's catering to the fantasy, he's strengthening the fantasy. The fantasy has a greater chance now of affecting his decisions. So,
How
does
the fantasy become? Has become stronger just from him watching it?
How it becomes stronger
when
he watches this
great
CEO? Yeah. Because everything that he sees in the fantasy attracts him. It's more attractive.
But he already knew that he wanted to be powerful. Right?
Yeah, but as long as you get, that's just the feeling of being powerful. But when it solidifies on something in particular, that's when it gains its strength.
It could be a reality then.
Right. It renders it a reality, and it becomes attached to something which is tangible and real. So then the mind really is attracted to it. It's drawn, it's fixated on it. So that's what you're not allowed to do. But you're allowed to read literature if you want to analyze the characters.
Mm.
And show what's true and what's not true. That you could do. But to read literature and be influenced by it, just to fall under its spell, that's awesome. But if you want to read it because you want to really analyze and see the mistakes of the author or how it affects you or how the author's trying to draw you in, that already is chachma. So that an analysis of literature is a mutter. You're allowed to do that, to analyze it and to understand it. But to just fall prey to being under the influence of it because of the flowery language and the sensitivity that it accesses in you, innate sensitivity that it accesses in you. That's not a good thing.
But even if he's analyzing it, one still gives specifics to his fantasies.
No, not if he's analyzing logically. On the contrary, it will break down the fantasy.
Oh.
Of course, we'll analyze it logically instead of emotionally.
So, it seems like these things have deep unconscious effects on you. So, even though, just because he is engaging in this conscious activity of analyzing them, his emotions just won't attach to it because of that?
Right. He's putting in place the supremacy of his mind over his emotions. So he's stripping it of its power. Its power is that it sounds right. It's like somebody asked me if they were allowed to read the New Testament. So I said it depends on the person. If the person's going to be drawn in by the emotions, so then he can't. Because he'd be allowing himself to be drawn into a false philosophy. But if he's analyzing it and he sees the ridiculousness of the of what's portrayed there in terms of logic and reason, then on the contrary, then he could study it. So it depends. Because the logic tears it apart. See, once the mind sees the logic of it, then the emotion is lost. Because the emotion can't stand up in the face of the logic. Once logic shows that it's detrimental and it's going to lead to your undoing, the whole emotion is gone. Because the emotion has to be blinded from the reality in order to take hold in the person.
Yeah, a person can intellectually realize something though, and his emotions can still be attracted to it, right?
He can be attracted to it, but there's going to be attracted to it in between. really seriously considering engaging in it.
Mm-hmm.
You're always attracted to it. That's why you have that law, Al Tefno Al Limon, because if you weren't attracted, you wouldn't need luck. You're always attracted. Nothing wrong with being attracted. What's wrong is that's a natural thing which you can't stop. But your person is a part of a person's nature. A person can't change his nature. But to follow through with a part of his nature that could be detrimental, that he could stop. Yes.
Well, no, you're just part of the same question. But Owen Rivers said like that you're still attracted. But I'm saying like, I mean, if you really understood the logic of a certain avera and like you didn't, like you realized why it's so bad for you, then I mean it would be the same thing as someone offering you like a really good steak, but he tells you that it has poison in it. I mean, like, you're not attracted to that steak anymore, are you? Like, it's completely, utterly.
Well, it depends. There's different levels. I mean, you're talking about a higher level. Like, that would be a good example. A steak that smells good, but you know it's laced with cyanide.
Right.
So a regular person would still be attracted to it because it smells good in it.
Oh, okay.
But he'd say that, I can't do it because of the consequences, right? But then there's a person who is rational, who has reached a point of rationality where when he sees a harmful substance, and even things that are, where he sees a harmful substance, even things that are tasteful, in the harmful substance, you simply can't be attracted to it. That's a different level of person. And it is true that the that's what the Gemara says, that when they tried to seduce Rabbi Akiva with, I believe it was Tinus Rufus's beautiful wife, so he, when he saw her, one of the things he did was he spit. He left, he spit, and he cried. He left because he knew he'd be able to win her over, and he married her. And he cried because he knew that the beauty that's so attractive is so temporary. So he wasn't taken in by the beauty. And he spit because of the idea that they thought that they could seduce him with just physical beauty. So to him, it meant that to him it was distasteful. But once he saw the truth, so the attraction became distasteful. But that's a high level. A regular person is not on a level. A regular person would be enticed by the aroma of the steak, I mean, in spite of the fact it's laced with cyanide.
So it's like when the Rambam says, like, I mean, in that Shmona Prakim, he quotes the Chazal, it's like you shouldn't say that you don't want to eat a non-kosher, rather you should say that you want to. Nevertheless, there's a commandment on that too. Like, I mean, is that for the normal person, or is that even for the chacham? Like, I mean, should the chacham even have the attraction? I mean, he knows that there's a certain there's a certain lack of perfection in not following. Like, I mean, so he doesn't realize the ultimate perfection in not doing that. Like, I mean, is it still like?
You're asking a good question. He's saying, why does the Rambam say a person shouldn't say if she's a chazir, I don't want chazir? Why should a person not say that? If the person realizes the harm,
right, the ultimate chacham will just realize
the harm that will come from eating the chazir, right? But the answer is because the harm, there's no harm that comes from eating chazir per se. The harm is from living a life of lack of control. But the chazir itself is just a detail.
Mm-hmm.
So if he says I don't like chazir, it means he's talking himself into the fact that he doesn't like the taste of chazir. See, that's not a perfection. If he says, I don't like to violate the restrictions because they're better for me, that's something else. That's good. But if he says, I just don't like this particular object, like a taboo type of thing, that's not perfection. Like, this is bad. This chazer is something different about chazer than cow's meat. I mean, that's like a taboo. Like, this is a bad meat. See, that's not perfection. That's a taboo system. But if he says I don't have a desire for chazer because I have control of my emotions and it's very easy for me to say no to a particular food even though it's very enticing, that's a level of perfection. That's not what the Gemara means. Al tomar yifshi b'sar chazer. The Gemara means don't say that chazer in specific is I don't like it. I don't like the taste of it. That's just making it into a taboo. That's not perfection. But you say I'm not, it's easy for me not to eat chazer because I appreciate the fact that my perfection, I gain perfection by restricting my tithes, and this is an important thing for me, and that's why it's not difficult for me to abstain from chazer. That is the level. That's the difference. When we isolate the item, and say this item, you make the item into an enemy. You see, that's against the that's what the Rambam means.
Well, what are you saying about literature? Does that apply equally to like television shows and movies? And so if
it's always applies the same thing. Yeah, that's true. If a person watches a movie, it will be the same thing. That people walk out of the movies and they praise killers. And they, I mean, that's robbers, killers. They're enchanted by these figures. That's not a good thing. I mean, they talk about it today, whether it causes more crime or not. But whether it does or whether it doesn't, it's not perfection. It's not promoting perfection.
Do they find out if they were today, do we were alive today, would they just like literature is up to the adult author? Or
the adult author, unless you analyze it. Mm-hmm. If you analyze it, then and you show that it's really nonsense, then it's mutter. Or if you show why it's attractive to the human mind. Why is that so attractive? See, when it's really false.
They do it just for enjoyment?
Just to get carried away by your own emotions.
Right.
That is not good. Because you're learning a different value system.
Right.
You're taking a false value system that people that are killers, what's the movie, The Godfather. Right? I mean, it's a total distortion. It's an absolute distortion. It's not who's the guy who wrote it? Puzo? Yeah. So he himself knew that he wasn't writing a true thing. He was glamorizing these people, making them into family people, and they have a good system of justice, they're just, they're family-minded, they have great qualities. They're really low-life killers. So if you glamorize the life of a murderer, the life of a killer, a brutal murderer, you glamorize his life, that teaches it, that brings a person into the world of emotions that justifies the most horrible things. So that's taking a person down. But if you study it and you realize it's all a bunch of nonsense and how they're trying to show you something that's attractive and they're trying to give you, they're working on your sense of security and that's what's attracting you. You understand what moves you in it, even though it's so ridiculous and ruthless. I mean, these people are barbaric. So then you gain from it. If you just go there to be under the sway of the emotions of the movie, that is bad.
Yeah, what if it's like, you know, for relaxation or something? Like, could you read a book or watch a movie for relaxation, or is that the bad form of relaxation?
And it's a bad form of relaxation because if you're not analyzing it, so what you're doing is you're just giving way to your base emotions.
Right.
So you say, is it a good idea to relax and just give way to my killer instincts and enjoy them and raise them to a level of good existence? It may be relaxing, but it's not a good way to relax. Yeah.
So the thing is, would that only be mutter to do if you analyze every fantasy that's in there? Because most probably there are going to be fantasies in there that you're going to have resistance to analyzing.
Well, if you try to analyze it as much as you could, then I think it's a different becomes a different phenomenon.
Oh, so
you know what I mean?
Saying the approach when you're watching the movie, itself,
right?
Not like every particular thing.
That's right. The approach. Then you're not a victim of the movie.
Otherwise,
us. Because you're placing yourself in the position of a victim to false ideas, which are going to attract you, because we all have murderous desires, and we all have fantasies of power and omnipotence and all kinds of crazy things, and they're all in all of us. And if you arouse those emotions and you raise them to a status of a good, what stops you is the fact that it's not a value. But if you raise it to a value, then you're going to really move towards those emotions. I mean, a mafioso So, well, if he doesn't kill somebody, he could feel terribly guilty because he didn't do the right thing. So you could take murder and you could raise it to a value. Like, what's his name? Somebody killed his kid. Who was the guy at the famous guy, last big mafioso guy. Wasn't it? No, more recent. He died in jail. Not the keys from the mafia. So he, somebody killed his kid by accident.
This was recent.
Yeah. What was his name?
I don't remember.
He was the guy that killed the former guy.
Yeah, I know.
It's a funny thing. I wrote a book about Johnny, I think it's Johnny Bo Gravano. He was his underboss. So the fellow wrote a book. He made him sound like such a nice guy. He liked to go jogging, and it was unbelievable. The book was the fellow who wrote it was Vuh Maiz. He didn't mean it to be distorted, but as soon as he had an opportunity, he was killing people again. He was a hitman. He killed 19 people. You can't make that guy into a tzaddik. He just got caught up in the mob, and then he's a killer. So. The distortions of these things are very great, and people like to believe that because they're naive. And it placates them and also caters to their emotions and caters to their own emotions. So anyway, so that other fellow is somebody killed his son by accident. He had to kill him to avenge his death, even though it was absolutely not his fault. He couldn't live with himself unless he kills the guy. So that could become a value. And murder and robbery can become a tremendous value because there's a part of us and a part of us that has that desire. So the Torah recognizes that. So the Torah says you can study it, but as long as the mind is on top of it. But if you let the emotions go free in that area, then you're in danger of destroying your soul.
It's important that part of the movie that you intellectualize be the fantasies per se, or is it just important that you make the movie into an intellectual topic?
I think the main thing is that if it's an intellectual topic, if the mind isn't asleep and the mind is active,
so then
there's no danger. But if there's supremacy of the mind, then there's no danger. But if you just fall prey to the emotions, just let your mind slip. Like you disconnect the critical faculty of your mind, and just going through the emotion, that is a dangerous thing. That is a bad thing. We aren't the only ones that hold that way. I believe Plato held the same way.
About literature.
Yeah.
Right, he said about poetry.
Poetry, right.
Would you say that it would be...
funny thing, and the two never met, really. So it's interesting. the people can arrive at a truth independently. One was through Nevuah, and one was through Chachma.
So would you say one should not bring up their kids watching movies or TV, things like that?
I would say it depends what they watch. You know, I mean, there are good things on TV. There are educational programs. And those things are good. Some of them are fun. Just because something's fun doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad. I mean, just because they enjoy it. I mean, you can watch a movie that doesn't have any bad, a documentary or some people fighting for justice or something like that. I mean, where you're not distorting the value system, that's a different thing. But... So I wouldn't say you can't watch it, but I'd say you have to be careful what you're teaching the child. If you're teaching the child that violence is a good for its own sake, that's not a good value. Well, I have a good machlokes today about that. you know, whether it has an actual effect or not. But regardless whether it has an actual effect or not, I don't know if it does have an effect, does make more criminals or not, but you, in terms of your soul, you're jeopardizing your soul because you're following a path which engages an element of man which is not good. Not that the element is bad, but the element has a use, but doesn't have this use. You're using it for the wrong purpose.
So I would assume the movie, let's say you watch a movie, probably has to be reviewed by you first and before you're going to show it to your kid.
Right.
Right.
If there's good elements in the movie, he shows it. Chesed is good, he shows it. You know, there are movies that have good elements.
When you're saying like Chesed is good and like people fighting for justice, so usually in these movies, the people who are fighting for justice are doing Chesed. They're doing it out of completely, they're not doing it because of the true idea of Chesed or justice. Probably based on some type of emotion. But you're saying even though the actions are, because the actions are good actions.
Right. As long as it's not based on bad emotion. But a person who has a love of Chesed and a love of justice, even though he's not the biggest chacham, but he just appreciates justice, that's still good. It doesn't have a deleterious effect on the person. On the contrary, it strengthens his search for the reason why justice is good.
Is this a proper approach to watching movies? Is that like the best form of recreational activity, or is that like a thing to do, like a good thing to do on its own?
Is it a good thing to do on its own, or is it the best or the worst, you're asking me?
Yeah.
Well, it's the best thing really is to study ideas themselves. That's the best thing, to engage in the study of philosophy, which is the study of ideas. But there is also something to be gained by using your analytic mind and going, seeing beyond the emotions and extrapolating ideas. That is also a limud. So I wouldn't say that it's the best or the worst. I'd say that it's a different type of a limud, which is significant because the pasuk says that lo suma lasos. So it must have a talmid love in the lahaski. But you'll have to learn magic and study magic and see how it works and see the falseness and understand why it attracts people and the power of magic, why it seduces people to believe it. And that's good. It's good because that's all knowledge. So that's a win-win. See, the Sanhedrin will have to know it.
What's the difference between a person watching a movie doesn't analyze it and just lets the emotions run loose? What's the difference between that and if a person goes and plays like a basketball game and gets really into the competition and stuff like that?
And he gets into another emotion.
Yeah, and doesn't analyze.
Well, I would say that in a movie, there's an ideal presented. You're presenting an ideal. And that's why these stars become very idealized. So when you're presenting an ideal, that's a dangerous thing if the ideal is wrong. If you're playing basketball and you lose yourself and you get angry, that's not good, but you're not setting it up as an ideal. You're saying, I lost myself. So that's not as bad. In the movie or in literature, you're setting up an ideal.
Isn't it just a different degree of the same... setting up an ideal, if a person sees playing basketball and getting into the game as a good thing, then isn't that he's not saying that this is my ideal? Isn't he living that way to a certain extent?
Right, but he also recognizes that it's a silly thing and it doesn't get him anywhere and it's just a momentary thrill. An average person might get into the game, but I don't think he thinks this is a real value in life.
Don't most people treat movies most people don't think that they get their don't treat movies as something that they get their ideals and values from?
I think they do.
They do?
Yeah, I've seen many people do. That's their philosophy.
Are you saying that they consciously treat it that way, or that's just
what they
happens?
Believe that the decisions that these people make in these movies, they believe are very good, oftentimes. and they reference them in their own lives. And a lot of people do that. So it's just like a movie I saw yesterday, that person said this and that and that. You know, that's the same type of thing. Yes.
What's the difference in definition between emuna and yediyah? Because like they both don't mean faith, but what is like so like why is emuna commonly mistranslated as faith? Like what is it about? Like what's the difference?
Okay, and yediyah knowledge, yediyah, so you know and you understand the steps of the thing.
You understand like the specifics, but like everything, like the particular.
Particular, like I mentioned right at dinner, that Moshe Rabbeinu understood how the chemistry of the wood interacts with the chemistry of the Mayan to make its wheat. That means he understood it. Okay, and Muna means we don't understand the particulars, and the particulars may even seem strange or far fetched, but you know that it's going to be true because you have a basis to believe in it. In other words, like you know Nevu is true, like for instance, the fact that there will be an Achras HaYomim. So you know it's true because you believe in the Divrei Navi. But it seems far-fetched to your mind. You don't really see, you have no way of knowing how it's going to come about. So the particulars don't appeal to the mind. So that's where you say Amuna.
Right.
Amuna means that you know true. Will be substantiated, but you can't see it.
Right.
You can't see. You don't really see how the concatenation of events are going to bring it about, and you don't understand it. But you have a solid generic principle that leads you to the conclusion that it will occur. That's what I mean about Hashem. I mean about Hashem Moshe Abda. So it means that they knew that if God says that it's true, Moshe Rabbeinu conveys it to them that it's true, and even though they may not understand it, they know that nevertheless it's true. Like the person who goes to a physician, he doesn't understand the medications, mm-hmm. but he knows he has a basis to assume that it's true. That's emuna. He has emuna in the physician, but if he's the physician himself, he has yediyah. Hopefully.
So our question, what is like the tachon, what is people, you know, like in general, like how people say in general you should have trust that everything will work out. That's obviously a fantasy. But is there a sure idea of the tachon or?
Yeah, well, Chazonish is very much against that idea. Because he says you can't have an idea of bitachon that God's gonna do what you want. Because that's a false idea. How do you know? You see the biggest tzaddikim had bitachon and it didn't work out. So he says, bitachon doesn't mean that you know it's going to work out. Bitachon just means that you know it's in God's hands and it could work out, but not that it's definitely that you can tune into some source of knowledge and that it's definitely going to work out your way. You could know that God is the shofet emes, and whatever He judges is emes. That you can know.
You mean it could just be an accident of nature?
Even if it's something which is. A natural occurrence,
mm-hmm.
but the person is on a level that he should be removed from nature.
So don't most people then have bitachon? I mean, like most, like I'm saying, like normal Jewish people, they think that you know things are in God's hands. I'm not saying socially. I'm saying like somebody who has normal beliefs. It's not like a sorry. I'm not, I didn't say my question. I'm saying most somebody who understands that you know there's a system of nature and a system of Hashkafa process. Does
right.
that mean he has bitachon, or is there some higher level?
System, well, what do you understand?
No, the guy understands that there is the laws of physics and there is Hashkafa process and the earth all, you know, emanates from God. You know,
that's
so
the problem.
That's it.
Yeah.
Why should you give a person the benefit of the doubt? Like, sometimes I understand it, but like, sometimes when it seems like the person has done something wrong, then you can assume the person did something wrong.
Well, it doesn't mean to give him the benefit of the doubt if all reason tells you that he did something wrong. It means, insofar as it's possible that the person had a good intention, you shouldn't rob them of that possibility. So, have you done eskalotim l'kaf schus doesn't mean that every person that does you evil, that you have to believe he's good. That's naive. what we say in the country, we say even a Talmud Chacham, Chaddeu v'Chashdeu, respect them and suspect them. Because it could be a big Talmud Chacham, but he might be weak in a certain emotion. So you can't really trust him. So, but respect him, he deserves respect. But the idea of Dan Lakafskos does not mean that you would judge everybody, no matter what, how evil they are, that Lakafskos, it's only if it's possible. Because a person has a tendency to really lash out at somebody and to condemn somebody when the person does something that affects them in a negative way. Because the negative effect, you see, causes the person to look for someone to blame. So that's really what it's telling you. Don't let that effect necessarily cause you to conclude that this person is an evil person. Because it's just the effect that you're suffering from. You follow what I mean? So let's say, for instance, I don't want to give that example. let's say, for instance, someone sold you a house, and it turned out that it was a lot of things wrong with it. So because it turned out that way, so it has a benefit that it aggravates you. So a person has a tendency to blame somebody to blame. But that's not logical. Couldn't be the person was totally innocent. So you have to separate the affect that you have from the negative situation and push that aside and look at the person himself fairly. And if there's room for the person to be exonerated, you shouldn't condemn him because he may in fact be a good person. So that would be wouldn't be logical. So it's just telling you rationally how to deal with it.
So you're saying, like in the case of the house, you can say, like, well, maybe he doesn't know about this.
Right.
And you should go ask him first.
Right.
Does he know about this and he doesn't know?
Right. That's right. And then say, it's possible he didn't know. So why should I condemn him? Because I'm angry at it, because it's a bad thing. It's like parents with children, too. So the children do things that upset the parents. So the parents have a tendency to condemn the children. But many times it's just because the parents were affected that way that they do it. The child was innocent, didn't know what he was doing wrong. See, that's the same thing. Because we tend, when we're hurt, we tend to react in a way we lash out. So that shouldn't be the guiding... The guiding light in human relations. You should be above that.
Is the thing you should just suspend judgment, or you should judge unfavorably?
Well, you should investigate, and if it's proven that the person really did it, they're an evil. So then there's no more Dan LeKafskos, because that's the end of the din. Then came out with LeKafskos. But if you can't prove that the person did evil. You have no right to say that he definitely is evil. You may doubt, you can be suspicious of him, but you have to treat him equally as if he were good.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no reason to condemn him. So I'm not saying you shouldn't be wary of the possibility, but you can't treat him as a person who's evil because you really have no proof that he's evil. You have to treat him in a way that you befriend him as if he's a good person. But again, I'm not saying that there's no reason to be careful. Chaddeu v'chashdeu, you're still going to be suspicious of him, but you can't treat him as if he's condemned because you were hurt.
So the word done isn't talking about how you evaluate the particular situation, it's more talking about how, like, your relationship to the person?
Well, done means to judge. Don't come out with a final judgment that he's evil.
But isn't the thing to come up with a final judgment that he's in favor of him?
Well, that's what it means. LeKafskos means that even though the circumstances may be against him, you should go to the side of exonerating him because he may in fact not be guilty.
Right, but it's not saying don't judge him disfavorably.
No, not if the evidence is there. If you have evidence that's disfavorable, then you make a judgment.
Right.
Everybody isn't good. And you can't change reality. But many times people dislike others for wrong reasons. They may be innocent, and because they were affected in a certain way, they react that way. It's a reaction. That's wrong.
Like it to me still seems like the advice is the way the advice is worded is that you should judge them in a certain way, but what you're saying means is just that you should suspend your final conclusion.
Right, but more than just suspend your final conclusion, you have to treat him like a chaver. You have to treat him like he's a good person, and act towards him as if he is a good person, because you have no right to assume he isn't. So you have to give him the benefit of the doubt and treat him as if he is a good person. But it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be aware. But you can't feel towards him that he's evil. You have to feel towards him that he's a good person.
Mm-hmm.
You have to feel friendship towards him.
So the thing, your feeling towards him should be based on the Dhamma of Schuss rather than...
That's right. Your feeling should be based on the Dhamma of Schuss. Okay? Yeah.
Have one more or pick up next time?
Maybe we'll pick up next time.